Elizabeth, are you ready?
Yep.
We'll open House Revenue. This is House Committee on Revenue, Wednesday, the 6th of April, 2005. It is 1:35. We are starting a half hour and a few minutes late as a result of the floor discussion and floor debate, and we appreciate, again, the good work that all members are doing and providing for members of the House and their respective caucuses. We will begin today by opening public hearings. I think what I'll do is open a public hearing one at a time on 3232, and then we'll go from there. So what I will now do is open a public hearing on House Bill 3232 and ask for staff's research on it, please.
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 3232, we heard this once before, but basically what it's doing, dealing with the R&D, Research and Development Tax Credit, it's increasing the maximum annual cap on that tax credit to $1 million, and the changes are effective beginning tax year 2008. So if you remember, under current law, we're at $750,000. This is going to increase it then $250,000, but that increase will begin out in 2008. So what I've done is just look at what is the revenue impact from this particular policy change, and that's what you've got in the revenue impact statement there. You've got static numbers as far as these are just looking at an additional 6 to 12 corporations would claim this increased tax credit amount of $250,000, and then I've also adjusted it for basically those taxpayers that wouldn't have tax liability also in order to be able to use all this. And then from that static impact, which is roughly in the outer years $1.5 million, I also then looked at the Oregon tax incident model as far as looking at the feedback effects. But since this is a not a really big revenue impact bill, it doesn't cause much stimulus in the economy. And again, that stimulus is phased in over 5 years. And so this really only has about, I think it's about 6% overall of the tax positive impact as far as feedback. And as we begin to talk more, and next week we'll maybe have a bigger discussion about different proposals and what stimulates, what the Oregon tax incident model sees as bigger stimulus, that's what you're going to be seeing then with these different proposals. There's just these positive feedback effects from these tax cuts. So this roughly is a loss in revenue of $1.2 million in the 2008-09 fiscal year, and then the 09-11 biennium, roughly $2.7 million for the biennium. So that's basically it for this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. We have signed up to testify on behalf of this bill, Paul Phillips and Mark M-O-D-J-E-S-K-I, Modjeski. I apologize, Mark. Mark's from Tektronix, and he's the tax manager. Now that it's after March the 15th, most of these corporate folks can come forward and actually have a place at the table. Yeah. Representative Comp is recognized.
I have a question for Elizabeth. Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you have comparative figures for this year from 2005, 2006 for what our loss is for this?
Oh, you mean how big the credit is currently?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was in there.
Well, you have it's worth that. It's $750,000, but what's the total cost to the state?
Was that? Yeah, it was. It's the corporations claim $24.8 million in total R&D credits in 2002, but only $3 million were actually claimed. So there's a lot of unclaimed credit right now. And that was in 2002 because that was a bad corporate tax year. So it's roughly $3 million a year as far as what has been claimed recently. But there's a lot more unclaimed tax credit. And that's why you're seeing these types of proposals is so that there isn't so much penned up tax tax credits that could potentially go unused.
Okay.
Because we've got.
I think I understand it, but I got more confused. But.
Okay, I know. It was kind of. But basically, it's $3 million a year in 2002, which was a bad corporate tax liability year.
Right.
So there was a lot of unused tax credit to the tune of over $20 million. Okay. So that's why you're seeing some of these proposals, and all of them are addressing the same issue in terms of not allowing corporations to lose these tax credits by not being able to utilize them. One of the ways they're restricted to the utilization is through this annual cap.
Got it.
And the annual cap is $750,000, and this goes up to $1 million.
Now, I think I got it. Thank you.
And Paul Phillips will try and explain that, and then after he's done, then Mark is going to go ahead and tell us what it means in English.
So. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent the Smart Growth Coalition. What we're actually going to do, now that you guys have got your blood pumping and a lot of energy going from the last session, is give you a brief overview on 3232, of which that has been handed out with a few very brief summaries of the reports. The stacks are very deep. My testimony for both bills, 3232 and 3233, are there. Mark has comments to make, and then I will make my comments. I just, for the committee's benefit, however, Chair Butler, Vice Chair Haas, and Representative Scott led a group that worked with Senator Deckert last session to change the definition of R&D tax credits to align that with the federal government. That was seen as a very positive economic development move. It passed overwhelmingly. We moved incrementally, very small uptick on the tax credit amount itself, and this bill is designed not to have a fiscal impact this biennium, but the feedback that we've gotten from the economic development experts around the state, as well as tax councils that I represent, was that it was very, very positively received as part of a package. So that's a little bit of a historical perspective as to who has worked on this. With that, you can see me anytime, so I'd rather bump it to Mark, who is the verified tax expert here, and let him go, and then I'll follow up.
Sure. Mark Mojeski, I'm the tax director for Tektronix in Beaverton. As you might expect, we are here in support of House Bill 3232. The bill would expand the Oregon Research Credit cap, and therefore we believe increase its effectiveness as a retention and attraction tool in Oregon. My company, in case you don't know, was founded in Oregon after World War II, 1946. It's been almost 60 years in business here. Roughly 70% of our manufactured product comes out of the Beaverton plant. Last year, our last fiscal year ended May 2004, we spent approximately $130 million on research and development, most of which was in Oregon. That represented about 13-14% of our total revenue. For us, quite simply, research and development is our lifeblood. We have to do research and development to make the next generation of products so that we can sell our product in a competitive marketplace, which is now a worldwide market. Increasing the research credit cap from $750,000 to $1 million would be important to Tektronix and to selective other companies that perform qualifying research in Oregon. An important thing to remember here is that the research has to be conducted in Oregon. It has to be incremental research, meaning that you have to spend more in the current year than you did over a base in Oregon. So if you're not growing your operations or if you're not spending more money on qualifying research in Oregon, there is no incremental credit. The other thing you have to remember, too, is that in order to get the credit, any benefit of the credit, as your legislative revenue staff person noted, is you have to have some Oregon tax. Of course, many of us in the electronics industry experienced a significant decrease in our revenues and our taxes with the last slowdown in the economy. So, of course, some of those credits built up over time were not used. Some of them slip off the table if they're not used within a within the three-year allotted time frame. Oregon is somewhat different than the neighboring states in its approach to the research credit, in that, number one, it has a cap. California does not have a cap on its credit. Our credit is 5% of qualifying wages over the base. California's credit, for instance, is 15%. There's no sunset date on the California credit. There's no cap on it. In Idaho, they have a similar 5% credit, but again, no cap on it, no sunset date. And it can offset, like in Oregon, all taxes paid. One of the things, I'll just bring it up, is that you're probably thinking to yourselves, and maybe ask me, so I'll just hit it head on, that this, you may be looking at this as a big giveaway of some state money to certain taxpayers. The way that I'll address that is that $250,000 a year, yes, it is money. Yes, it is money that we'll put back into research and development. There is, we believe, a multiplier effect on that. We don't invest to, you know, we don't, 14% of our revenue is spent on R&D, so there has to be about a 8 to 9 times payback in terms of sales for that research to pay off. So there's going to be additional revenue that, that Tektronix and the other companies report as a result of this increase in spending for research. That's going to translate into additional taxable income, which will be taxed by the state. The individuals that we employ to do this research, of course, are taxable. The suppliers that we go to for parts and supplies, equipment, et cetera, many of them are in Oregon. They're Oregon taxpayers. It's a belief of ours that this is not a revenue loser for the state under a dynamic type of model.
I'm done.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
I just had one question I needed to run past Mark. Mark, Elizabeth had some research that she provided me recently relative to the breakdown of where the a dollar of research money goes nationwide. I was interested in the results of it. In labor, either direct or contract labor, it showed that 74% of each dollar goes back into labor, and that 20% goes into supplies, and then there's a 2%, as I recall, into some overhead items, and then the balance, I'm going to guess, into miscellaneous, another 4%. 74% labor and contract labor, 20% into supplies. How does that compare, do you think, overall in your R&D work that you're doing out of 14% of gross?
Yeah, I'd say it's very close because the federal research credit, which is the basis for the Oregon research credit, the same computational methodology. Qualifying research is basically two components. It's the wages of the engineers doing the qualifying research, and it also consists of various supplies that are used or consumed in doing the research. It does not include overhead type items. It does not include depreciation on equipment, that kind of thing. So it's very directly linked to headcount. Headcount is the biggest component driving the credit, the wages of the Oregon engineers that are actually performing the qualifying research.
Give us, if you would, please, Mark, a snapshot of what one of these R&D engineers might look like, not wide and tall, those kinds of things, but when I'm looking at his demographics and his W-2, is this an old man that hates kids that makes minimum wage? I just need to know the demographics.
They're very educated workforce, as you might expect. Many of them came from Oregon State. I see you're wearing the colors. The Tektronix would be happy to see that. Very educated workforce. Many of them have advanced degrees in electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, etc. Highly paid individuals, hardworking types. Very smart.
Love children.
Love children.
That's important. Throw that in. So we're talking about not middle income, but probably upper income individuals at that point.
You're talking about good paying jobs in Oregon.
This is a side note, but I've worked with the folks out at OCHED and And with our engineering group, we're very anxious to make sure that we can be successful in that regard. But one of the concerns that we have is that Oregon produces just about twice as many lawyers as we produce engineers or technical people. How many of the engineers are you able to hire from local engineering pools?
Well, we do a lot of sourcing of our engineers from Oregon State programs, although, you know, it is getting more difficult to find them. We would love to be able to hire everybody that comes through the programs, but quite frankly, there aren't enough qualified people. And I think part of that is some of what you probably read about some of the brain drain going out of Oregon, some of the brighter high school students leaving for other programs. We do have to hire from around the country and also overseas to some extent.
And finally, there's a trend in the industry that is somewhat concerning to me, and that is we used to vilify some of these third world countries for just regular labor that we were outsourcing, you know, the piecemeal labor kind of things to. An item showed up in the Wall Street Journal this past month that was of concern to me, and that is that research and development and other very skilled and technical labor is now being employed in the third world countries because they're able to get pretty decent access to some engineer. Again, their schools are producing twice as many engineers as they are lawyers, more lawyers in the state of Oregon than there are in the entire country of Japan. My concern is, how much of that is going on overseas, and how is there more attraction to try and hire and do R&D out of country?
Well, I think sort of the economics of the business dictate that, number one, you build factories in places where it's important to generate a market for your products. So technology companies, like other companies, build factories in China not so much to monopolize on the labor so much as to have a market for their products in China, in India. But as you go there, you find out very quickly that in some cases the workers are highly trained, highly skilled, highly motivated, and you can tap into some of that for, you know, research needs for some of the things that used to be done in the United States. So I do think it's a trend where people are seeing that and they're trying to not so much take advantage of it, but when you don't have the population here to do the work, you have to go someplace else to get it.
And of course, we know that we're talking about an R&D credit that is only based in Oregon, but I'm still concerned that if we do not try and attract the engineering staff back here to bring this R&D to Oregon, then it's the third world countries that say, hey, wait a minute, you tell us the kind of engineering folks you want and our universities will produce them. And so that's what's of concern to me, I guess.
It's a very valid point.
Thank you. Paul, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips with the Smart Growth Coalition, and for clarity, that includes the Bear Creek Corporation, Cascade Corp, Columbia Sportswear, Greenbrier, Intel, Lithia Motors, Monaco Coach, Nike, Precision Cast Parts, Snitzer Steel, and Tektronix. Working with us closely is the Oregon Bankers Association and AEA. In my testimony today, we pulled, this is not a new issue. There are quantifiable results that can be attached to R&D. So I've given you two reports from 95, one in 97. One is a reiteration or a further detail of what staff gave you previously, and then an accounting for the top 20 states and where they fall in certain categories so that you have some factual data upon which to make your decisions. This comes to you by these companies and these different associations because Oregon, as you know, has the second highest unemployment rate, trailing just Alaska. But that's not the issue that we'd like you to focus on. It has a lot to do with industry sectors and annual wage levels. House Bill 3232 expands the ability of a very successful process on R&D tax credits from $750 to $1 million in 2008. There are many other people that would love to come before you and say, let's get rid of the cap and let's move it up to 2 million or 6 million or do whatever we can do. We are not opposed to that, but we know you are living within a fiscal reality and we need to work within that reality to keep Oregon competitive. There's every justification for making it a lot higher, but we're trying to work within your means. But most important to this, you don't get the tax credit unless you do the work here in Oregon. Let's keep focused on that one. Unless it happens here in Oregon, you don't get the tax credit, which means they hire higher than average income, higher than average education, and work in predominantly the manufacturing industry, which is exactly from an economic competitive standpoint where you want to be. That is why past legislators have adopted the federal R&D statutes or aligned themselves with it and started to move forward. If you look, and I'd just like to touch on what Mark had commented, Oregon doesn't make the top 20 in the National Science Foundation R&D investments list that was just released. California and Washington rank first and ninth, respectively. And if you look also at their annual family income, it's higher than Oregon's. I would argue that there's a cause and effect to that, so you can track that across the nation. With very few exceptions on that list of companies on R&D investment, and those that don't track with the income to R&D investments are ones that have moved very quickly to expand R&D in their states to help improve their annual family incomes. Research and development in high-tech, biotech, and manufacturing sectors provide a very clean, high-paying jobs in Oregon. 75% of the R&D activities, on average, are paid more than just in the non-high-tech area. Now, this is not a Washington County-specific issue. I'm sure staff will share with you that there are pockets of biotech and research and development that include Klamath Falls, Jackson County, Lane County, and Deschutes County, as well as Washington County and the Tri-County area. The fact that my coalition happens to represent the largest high-tech company and the oldest high-tech company, sometimes its R&D is viewed as just a Washington County issue. It's not, although Representative Riley would note that it's very important to our area. So I don't mean to diminish it, but it is a statewide issue.
But those counties, again, I didn't hear any in Malheur County, Harney County, Baker County, Grant County.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, the rules that govern our conduct have us to help to tell the truth. So I can't say if you compare it, Klamath Falls and Deschutes County and Jackson County are ranking a little higher than Ontario and Burns and some of those areas.
Great place to live, though, Paul.
There you go. There you go. 53% of the amount that was credited on R&D is manufacturing alone. And as you know, the last few years have been hard tax years for the manufacturing industry. And I would say if there was one area to encourage R&D expenditures from a public policy standpoint, that is certainly it. Mr. Chair, my testimony touches on the Dunnigan study of evaluating empirical data on R&D tax credits. And you are absolutely right. For every dollar in tax credit, you can say 74 cents to $1 is generated in terms of increased economic activity. As we've heard debated this session and last, this isn't a what-if happens. There is quantifiable data that is attached to this. This change, we believe, although prospective, doesn't have an impact this biennium, will have both a short and long-term economic increase, and it will create jobs. We've laid that out in my testimony and the materials that I've attached here. But I would just say from a return on investment standpoint and from the fact that you don't get this credit unless you invest in Oregon, those are two things that I think weigh heavily in this in its favor. I don't want this to be seen as, boy, our bill is different than other R&D bills in the philosophy of that. Ours is different in the sense that it doesn't have a fiscal impact this biennium, and it moves up incrementally. So those are the differences from the other bills that you'll see that lift the cap or change the cap even further and deal with the carryover effect. But those are my comments relative to this measure, Mr. Chair, and we obviously would appreciate moving it forward at the appropriate time tomorrow.
Thank you very much. We are scheduled for a public hearing work session series tomorrow. Also, we I anticipate that there will be a time on Monday for additional new bill introduction at the request of the Speaker's office, so we will have that on the calendar for Monday as well, colleagues. Questions of Mr. Phillips or Mark Majeski? Representative Boquist is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get educated, so don't read into anything to my questions. Number of Tektronix employees in Oregon, number worldwide, number of overseas facilities. I mean, I see Tektronix all the time, but I have no clue, per se. I mean, okay. Can you give me a quick background? How many
good
Oregon employees?
Good stock for your portfolio.
I'll try to do my best. These will be sort
rough
of
number.
Ballpark. Oregon-based employees, roughly 2,400. Worldwide employees, roughly 4,300. We recently acquired another publicly traded company in Texas, so now we have some Texas operations. By and large, though, our campus in Oregon is the predominant, place for employment in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Mr.
Follow up, Representative.
Any overseas facilities?
Yes. We have a facility in Japan. We have a facility in China. We have manufacturing in Berlin. We have sales and service subsidiaries throughout the world. Roughly 25 of those smaller offices.
Follow up.
You said Berlin.
Yes. Berlin, Germany.
East or west?
West Germany.
Western side. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further questions of Paul or Mark relative to House Bill 3232? Thank you again. We appreciate your being here, and we'll anticipate finishing this up tomorrow. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3232 and open the public hearing on House Bill 3233. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 3233, this is the one that's dealing with marketing the research and development tax credit. So basically it's allowing those corporations which are eligible to claim an R&D tax credit but have insufficient tax liability to sell then the tax credit. It puts specifications in the bill that any compensation received from selling a research and development credit has to be used to pay for future research and development expenses. So that money is tied to future research and development. Also, it's requiring a taxpayer who sells the tax credit to file with the Department of Revenue. Then it provides the department with rulemaking authority to evaluate those credit sale applications. It's mandating that if a sale of the tax credit is to occur, then the amount of compensation shall equal at least 75% of the amount of the tax credit. The corporation who is purchasing the tax credit cannot own or control 5% or more of the corporation that's selling the tax credit. So you can't have sales within different subsidiaries of a corporation. The taxpayer also has to show no positive income for the past two years, and then the taxpayer's operating revenue divided by its operating expenses results in a ratio of less than 110 for the past 2 years. And also then the taxpayer cannot be part of an affiliated group of corporations that are filing a consolidated tax return at the federal level. It's limiting that total amount of sales of the research and development credit to $40 million per year and allows the taxpayer who purchased an R&D development tax credit to maintain their corporate tax return for 6 months to claim that tax credit. This is beginning in tax year 06. And I don't know if there's any amendments or anything, but basically the Department of Revenue said that they, you know, have some concerns with administering this. They do not administer these type of credits. They do not administer any type of a selling of credits and trying to track that and things. And I think that was part of our discussion the last time we had this bill. As far as the revenue impact for that, I think you guys have that in front of you. Actually, I've lost my copy. Let's see.
That's okay. We'll give you 4 seconds.
So basically, what the main thing to think about with it, with kind of a marketing issue of these R&D credits, is right now you've got a lot of unused credit out there. You've got $20 million, and that has been $20 million for the past in 2001 and 2002, and in 2003 that should go down some, but still you can understand that there's quite a bit of pinned up unused tax credit. So what I'm anticipating here in this revenue impact statement.
The finding to ask question: how did you calculate that there's $20 million out there? It doesn't show on the returns.
Oh, Chairman Butler, you can look at how much you have to note what you're claiming. So total R&D credit claimed versus how much you're going to be using.
Okay.
So that is part of the form.
I see. So the form demonstrates the gross amount.
Yes, gross amount, and then they.
And you're capturing that information.
And that
annually.
Providing that's accurate information. But I mean, you would think if anything, it's understating how much there could be in unused credit. They could think, okay, I can only use $500,000 this year, so that's all I'm going to report. I mean, they're supposed to be reporting all that they have legitimate expenses in order to incur, and that should be reported. But that's what you're getting in the amount claimed versus actually used. So there is a way in which we're capturing that.
I see the tax director out in front of us here just squirming about in his chair a little bit about saying, Jimmy, I'm going to report everything that I think we're entitled to. Up front.
Right.
Excuse me.
Yeah, and that's another way you track it, too. I mean, from an auditing perspective, if you put that total amount.
Then I would assume that if it were sellable, the claims would be bigger? Or is there
Representative Butler, it has to be at least 75% of that value. So say if you're a corporation and you know this tax credit, we can only carry it forward 5 years. So if they know that this tax credit is going to go away and they can't use it all, they're going to want to sell it and at least get something. But at least this bill is specifying that tax credit sale has to be worth at least 75%. Of the value of that tax credit.
Did your fiscal include your revenue report? Did it include the tax impact of the sale itself and the income tax?
No. I did not incorporate in there then the amount that they're going to get in additional revenue, which then turns around and becomes additional R&D expenses the following year. I mean, so there's, I'm just assuming that they'll use that compensation, which they're required to, for future R&D. Research and development expenses.
Okay.
So that's part of it. But anyway, so what I've assumed here initially is in that first year that we would begin this, which is tax year 2006, we would see quite strong usage of this. So I assume that 70% of that unused tax credit, given what we've seen in 2002, would be used. So that's how you get a revenue loss there of $12.2 million as far as loss in that first year. But then in outer years, what you're going to be seeing is a drop. I mean, it's not that there wouldn't be all that unused tax credit out there to be sold. And then also in the future years, that they could have been going and trying to carry some of that forward. So you then get some positive impact from having some carry forward that then isn't carried forward because they just basically turned around and sold it. So it's not a simple calculation, but, there's a lot of assumptions. But basically, you see this is declining over time from the standpoint that we will eventually have less unused tax credits out there. And this is really an alternative to a carry forward of 20 years, which is what you see in the other bill. I mean, it's just a matter of how you want to do it, but this is an alternative to kind of having it.
So how static is the work that you've done? Is it just an attempt to capture just the amount of sales of the credit that would then be used by a third party, or does it go beyond that to try and anticipate, number one, the income tax that will be engendered by the fact that these folks have received, if they had $1 million credit coming before, now they've got $750,000 of ordinary income.
That's what you're getting when you're looking at the feedback effects or some of those positive impacts in the economy from basically making labor cheaper, which is what I've labor and portion of capital. I run this in the Oregon Tax Incident Model as both making labor more attractive and cheaper versus capital, but both of them are having a tax cut and made cheaper with the tax credit.
I just need to have a feel of how dynamic the static plus dynamic in that is. So if I've got $12 million worth of credits that are being sold that someone else will use,
then, and if it's 75% minimum that they can sell those for, mm-hmm. let's assume that they sell them for only 75, that's a generation of $9 million of income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if I look at the feedbacks and take $9 million at 6%, 6.6, but let's just take it at 5%. Don't I have about $450,000 of income, and I don't have any new jobs generated? So mm-hmm. Did you calculate the income tax on the sale?
Okay, so what you're basically talking about primarily is just the income tax component in terms of that compensation, and that's not what I modeled in the Oregon tax incident model.
Did you then model into the incident model the jobs that are created?
That's from making. Basically, with the Oregon tax incident model, you're taking a factor, in this case, labor and capital, and you're making them both, cheaper.
Okay.
So that's what you're doing with a tax cut. And
so the feedback is probably mostly individual income tax?
Well, yeah, there's some, but it's also just making the products, they're able to sell it at a lower price also. So you're lowering those, and corporate revenues are going down their profits are going up from having cheaper labor, and so that's what you're capturing then as additional corporate revenue.
I just need some level of how far we're drilling down in the dynamics.
Yeah.
Representative Riley is recognized.
Yeah, you're trying to put income in one company, but it's offset by the deduction from the other companies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And all I've modeled is a deduction in the Oregon tax incident model. I've modeled it like it was a tax cut
because
for someone.
Weren't previously entitled to it, weren't previously able to take it. Now they are selling it to someone who can.
Yeah. Okay. And Chairman Butler, I hope in the, maybe next week or something, we can get a little broader discussion about the model itself so you can get a little better understanding of what you do with these various proposals and how we're generating these feedback.
Okay.
Facts.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent the Smart Growth Coalition. And I will repeat who they are just so there's no confusion. Bear Creek Corporation, Cascade Corp, Columbia Sportswear, Greenbrier, Intel, Lithia Motors, Monaco Coach, Nike, Persagen Cast Parts, Snitzer Steel, and Tektronix. Mark is here with me today because I am not a full-time tax expert, so if some stumping question comes forward, I've got my security blanket. But I must tell you, there's two different philosophies working here. The legislature on the previous bill has set a pattern forth that it's a good thing to encourage R&D because of the high-level jobs and the variety of other things within the fiscal restraints of the state to expand the definition and to incrementally move forward on the amount. This is a different concept. They work together, but this same group came forward with it for a very real reason, some of which you touched on. This bill is written so it would have a fiscal impact this biennium. So it's different than the other bill, but it's an issue that I think you really, as a legislative policy, and we as business people really need to kind of start looking at in the state of Oregon, because it addresses, and by the way, my testimony on this I just attached in the bigger packet that I gave to you. It addresses a crucial shortcoming in Oregon's research and development tax credit program, particularly with respect to small and medium startup in the high-tech sectors. As it stands, credit benefit established corporations with earnings sufficient enough to benefit from the credits and the remaining little used, and while the remaining of the little is little use to the small and medium-sized companies. If you don't have income, therefore, you have, as a startup, there's an issue there. We would open the door to these small and medium-sized companies, these operations, and allow them to generate capital, which is the number one difficult hotspot, if you will, for startup companies. Startup companies seeking to enter the high technology and manufacturing fields often find themselves operating at a loss until they are able to turn a profitable product. They are making qualified research expenditures, but they have very little, if any, taxable income which to apply the credit to. By allowing them to claim and then transfer that credit to another company with an income, they would be able to generate seed money to fund further research efforts. This bill that's before you today is not new to the tax environment. New Jersey faced the same problem encouraging startup companies that were heavily invested in research but unable to take advantage of their research tax credit during those early years of development. In response, New Jersey then allows small and medium-sized companies to sell R&D credits and generate capital. The benefit of this program is really threefold. It benefits the new business ventures in research and development, providing access to capital. It benefits established corporations who are able to purchase those and offset their own gains. It benefits the state by encouraging the establishment of high-tech businesses, which in turn generate more jobs. In fact, I digress from my testimony, but if you would look at just the spinoffs from Tektronix itself, and what they have done statewide, and the companies that have generated from them, and now other companies that have sprung up from within that field, and those startups, that's the benefit to Oregon is really incredible. The Department of Revenue says they're not set up for this process, but in fact, this is not entirely new. The state has used these credits on the same principle to spur energy-efficient buildings and generate funding for schools through the Oregon Business Energy Tax Credit. It's a lot smaller, but there is a pattern there. So you could, we believe, transfer this into the high-tech community. As a committee, from a policy standpoint, you might say, great idea, but we can't afford the fiscal impact this time. Have it affect in 08 or something. The purpose of this bill really is to show that there are innovative ways to generate R&D jobs, to create capital for small startups. This is a concept that we believe is worthy of discussion. And I happen to practice the theory of incrementalism, where it takes three times for any bill to actually pass through the legislature and get signed by the governor. So you're going to see me for two more sessions, unless you want to pass this session. So, but this is a concept that you is worthy of consideration. Now, as staff told you, this is very hard to model within the OTEM system. But it still is a worthwhile process, and it would allow Oregon to be very attractive to startups and R&D, which is really vital to our economy. It's more of an introduction, if you will, Mr. Chair, to say there are ways to look at these things that we haven't previously had on the table, and we'd encourage that kind of exploration. We think this is a good policy. Understand the fiscal restraints. Might not be possible this biennium, but it is a concept that's well worthy of consideration. And unless, Mark, you want to make any comments other than answer questions, that concludes our testimony on this particular bill.
Thank you very much, Paul. I think Representative Riley would appreciate the fact that with his analytical mind and figuring this thing out, that there was a state back east that was doing the same thing, that was offering those credits for sale. I don't remember which one it was, whether it was New Jersey or one of those. Some freshman legislator come forward and said, now, wait a minute. Why doesn't the state buy those credits for 75 cents on the dollar? Because they're going to turn right around and be used as 100 cents on the dollar within just a matter of months. Mm-hmm. And so the state went ahead and went out and grabbed a hold of millions and millions and millions of dollars of tax credits at 75 cents on the dollar so that people couldn't use them for a dollar on the dollar. And I mean, you know, you stop and think about it for a minute, you say, well, you know what? There's a way to get that water to the end of the row one way or the other. So,
well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the creativity of that suggestion. Our goal here is to generate jobs and develop industry in the state, and that would seemingly thwart that idea.
Thank you very much, Paul. Questions? Representative Boquist.
I have a question first, Elizabeth, before I ask a question. In the 2006-2007 revenue model you have there, it's roughly $12 million figure. Okay. What portion of that would be new credits after the passage of this bill, and what portion would be just the old credits sold and carried for? I am looking for real R&D dollars. Because I see when you get down to 2011-2012, this drops down to basically $3 million. And it looks to me like $3 million a year is kind of the base. And so until we get to that point, we're just going to be trading old tax credits.
Yeah. Representative Boquist, yeah, I think, you know, you know, you could keep going with this. I mean, as far as looking at how many new corporations would be, you know, taking this each year. And the reason why it's going out is because you got basically 5 years of carry forward, and that's what I'm adding back in, that they won't be carrying it forward. Roughly, I've estimated around $3 million a year as far as an equilibrium out there.
Representative Hillquist, following up with your line of question, you could substantially reduce that by indicating that credits, this only applied to credits earned after a certain date. Okay. Follow up, please, Representative.
What I understand, what we're trying to do here is this is high risk capital, venture capital, basically, but it's not venture capital because it's cash on hand.
Right.
So if I understand the theory correctly, is that the large companies probably would not be involved in this, I'm thinking, because they have too many credits now.
But they would sell.
Yeah, but they'd sell. The medium companies, they would sell, but the people that are actually trying to raise the money are the small startups. Right. And they're the ones that don't have any income. So the small companies would be selling to a medium company that would not necessarily, well, maybe a high-tech company, medium or a high one, because the small ones are trying to raise revenue. The high ones cannot use their tax credits, so they're going to sell it. So run through this whole scenario of how we're doing it. What we're really talking about here is startup capital.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, we're down at the bottom of the food chain in startup capital. You can't get venture capital at this point. You can't get a bank loan. And so we're going to create, turn these credits into, for better word, you almost say high-risk capital. Right.
I see it more with the smaller companies, you know.
Mark, do you want to identify yourself again for the record for this bill?
Mark Mojeski, the tax director for Tektronix.
Thank you, Mark.
You know, the smaller companies, especially in technology, it's sort of like planting grapes. You know, you plant them in year one and you get a crop in year three or four, and the first wine you make is lousy, and then you start making some money. Technology is a lot like that. So a few guys get together with an idea. They're searching for venture capital. They put something together. The first couple of years they lose money. But guess what? They're performing qualifying research. They're generating a federal credit that's going nowhere. They're generating an Oregon credit that they can't use. This is an opportunity for them to monetize that credit by selling it to perhaps a company who could be highly taxable but just doesn't do any qualifying R&D. Think of a bank or a food company, a retailer type of business that for valid business reasons may want to purchase those credits to reduce their Oregon tax. The startup company receives seed capital. They've monetized some of their credit. It allows them to continue to get to that point where their break-even can become a business and hopefully grow, you know, grow, add headcount to their Oregon-based business and add jobs here.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative.
So I guess what I'm saying is we're not limiting this to R&D. What we're saying is that an R&D company, let's say a high-tech company, could in fact sell this credit to, as you mentioned, maybe an insurance company. And the insurance company would use that credit against their taxes. Is that what I hear you saying?
I believe that the bill would allow that, yes.
Yes. Mr. Chair, if I may, for the record, Paul Phillips, Representative, that's absolutely correct. Because there, you know, this is for startup qualified tax credits under R&D, which is defined in Oregon, tailors the federal. So you have to meet that threshold number one, or else it's a moot point. You don't have anything to sell. That's your product. Because we have an overall cap in the state, it could be other companies that do already qualify, but it could well be other companies that have nothing to do with R&D that do have a, from a tax liability standpoint, the ability to afford those. Either way, the goal is to create the jobs in the first place that do the qualified activity, and then create the capital so that they continue to grow and move forward. That's the concept that, in this case, New Jersey brought forward. It builds upon the proven record of research and development, but just takes it to the next step.
Representative Comp is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. I think Mr. Phillips almost, I'm almost to the point of understanding this, and you were getting there with my question is about, you know, who didn't use their tax credits?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, the way this is designed and most likely would work would be those small startup tax companies that do not have a tax liability, therefore their tax credit doesn't go against anything. So I guess legislative staff came up with there was 20 million or so unused credits for a variety of reasons, some of which because their tax liability has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact that they've used up the total amount that they can in Oregon right now.
Right.
So there's two different scenarios you would look at. Does that help clear the?
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Chairman Butler. It's kind of scary, but it's starting to make sense. So, but thank.
Uh-oh.
I know, and so I do appreciate you going over it a couple times with us to bring some clarity to it.
Representative Ratty.
I have about three things, if I may.
Please, right ahead.
Okay. One, I was wrong about when I said it was a wash. It's a loss because the company that's selling it has no tax liability, so they're probably not going to. They have a loss. They're not going to be paying taxes on that at all. The sale. Yes, they'll get that income, but they won't pay any taxes on it. So we'll lose. We won't gain any income there, and we will lose income on the other end. Number two. Is there, Paul, a trade? Are they allowed to sell energy tax credits now? Is that what I heard you say?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you should pull in the Department of Revenue, but it's transferability of those tax credits. So conceptionally, it's the same thing.
There is a transferability of...
Right. All I was trying to say is in the greater thing, and I'm sure Revenue is here today, I tried to make the point that this is a new deal. That is right. It is patterned after the same kind of thing that they would have to do, which is why I said if you were to move it off from 06 to 08 or out there in the future so it could be geared up, That is one of the things the Department of Revenue would have to adjust to.
Okay, so it isn't something that they currently
have. Correct.
Okay, good. And thirdly, if I understand this correctly, what we're doing with our new sale of R&D tax credits under this bill is allowing companies who have no R&D facility at all to reduce their taxes using that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I wasn't sure you were done. That's the concept as the bill is written now. It also allows, Mr. Chair and Representative, for you to bring the concept forward. Do you want it to limit to technology? Do you want it to limit to companies that already have technology? If you do that, Mr. Chair and Representative, you might want to look at just raising the cap even further, because if that's what you want to do, that's probably a more effective way to get right at the nut of the issue. The question is, how do you keep these technology R&D developments going forward and keep the R&D going with them, and what constructs do you want to have after it? On that end of the scenario that you laid out, it's more than appropriate to say here's who can and can't buy and sell those. The side of it that you don't want to screw around with, if you will, is what is a qualified R&D tax credit? Because that is defined and tied in, and that scenario is there. How you want to allow and who you want to allow to buy or sell or transfer, however you want to say it, that's what my opening comments. This is a concept that is proven a positive way to generate cash flow and venture capital. How do you want to take it? Where do you want to go with it? It's something that we think deserves examination.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions, Representative Boquist?
just thinking outside of the box here, Mr. Chairman.
You can't do that.
The federal government, and nobody in this room may know this, has a parastatal corporation called Overseas Private Investment Corporation. The corporation is designed to do almost identical to what we're saying here, is that once you have a, because it's high risk, what instead is that corporation either invests in or loans money to established high-risk entities. Would it not, from an economic, purely in the state's hand, from an economic position of the state, wouldn't it be better to have something like an Oregon Investment Corporation that would, once you have maybe some like R&D credits like this, that went in and invested money in those entities? Because the state's going to lose 25 cents on the dollar here in tax money anyway, if they did something. Is that another avenue for capital, high-risk capital financing? And I see, well, you're not, you may be familiar with Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are a number of ways to skin this cat and go forward. The issue, however, is to look at what R&D has actually done and the return on that investment. You know that there is a positive return based on every other state in the state of Oregon. So when you say they're going to sell it on 75 cents on the dollar, that is only technically correct from a static review of it. It doesn't take into account such things as what happens to the money, when it's turned in the economy, what taxes are generated from that, what other investments go into that, and what was done to generate that tax credit in the first place. If you look at it from a holistic standpoint, it is not necessarily accurate to say the state loses 25 cents on every dollar. The real issue is, how do you want to encourage research and development, particularly in the growth of biotech in the state? But I got to tell you, every manufacturing company, high and low tech, benefits from these too, based under the federal definition. So it's really how high risk and how much government do you want engaged in this. Mm-hmm. The buying and selling of the tax credits, as I understand it, and I would bump at the market at any point that I get too far out on this thing, is really keeps private sector to private sector going, and then is least government engagement on it. The system you set up is really a government entity that would oversee that process. So it's a philosophical, where do you want to go with it?
Follow-up, Representative.
I understand what you're saying, but and I didn't add the whole thing. I just added the skin the cat portion here. Out through 2012, where we actually hit equilibrium, and about 2012 or 2010 here, we hit equilibrium where for every dollar we're spending on this, it's regenerating R&D, so on and so forth. But my mathematical calculation here shows that we lose about $15 million, i.e. it is a loss, until we get to that point. Right. And that goes back to the issue you brought earlier, is maybe you put this out in front of you or something along that line. But that's my point is that, you know, for the first $15 million, it is a loss to us.
Correct.
And then, you know, you hit equilibrium, at which point, you know, we're now, every $3 million we're doing this is, of course, putting money back into the economy. I'm just wondering, again, $15 million spent, not that I would give it to Oregon Economic Development by any means, but I'm just wondering if there is another way to skin this thing that would be more effective.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, there's probably 1,000 different ways to do this that none of us will ever think of because we haven't had enough time to do it. But then the constructs of this bill, you could pick a tax year and go forward to address the issue that legislative staff has identified, which is the pickup cost. You could address Representative Riley's comments about, do you want to just have this to those that have already qualified for R&D tax credits to be able to buy it, so you know it stays within, quote-unquote, the industry. It depends on what your objectives are that you want to accomplish in this process. The issue, however, is R&D tax credits are a benefit overall to the state in the long run. Nobody seems to object to that one. The question then, and we do know that we have cash flow and venture capital issues in this state, is this one way to address it? I would say yes, it is. What kind of sideboards you put on it? And you might want to say for the next 6 years we're going to do X and then move forward. These are all, unlike the 3232, which I think is kind of ready to go and is a policy that the state seems to like, this one is one that needs to be vetted and discussed and figured out where you want to go.
Work in progress.
Thank you. Further questions of Paul or Mr. Majewski? Majewski. Sorry about that.
Okay, I screwed up.
Mark and Paul. Deborah Buchanan, we'd like to invite you up now, if you would, please. Thank you very much.
Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, our staff are really good at auditing tax returns and looking at the information on those. As you probably know, once you've been in the business long enough, it's just sort of like opening up a book, and the numbers are actually words, and they mean something to you. I don't know that we have the staff with the expertise to do the things that would be required as outlined in this bill on page 1, starting at line 25, and Representative Riley alluded to this at the last hearing.
On page 1 at 20 is where it delegates this to the Department of Revenue, and at 22 through 28 and 29, the determination, development of the tax rule criteria, approval and disapproval, and then the evaluation of taxpayers' actual and potential scientific and technological viability. Those are the kinds of things that typically OECD does some of that, don't you, Deborah?
I believe that they probably are better at it than we would be, Mr. Chair. We do look for whether or not a taxpayer is engaged in business to make a profit, but I don't think we look for scientific and technological viability, whether their products are sufficiently innovative to provide a competitive advantage, or whether the sale would result in a significant increase in full-time employment. We could do that if we had the resources to either train existing staff or hire additional staff. But that is not something that I believe we're set up to do now. As to other credits and their transferability, I believe it's correct that the energy credit can be transferred. I would want to research what the parameters are on that, because that is not something that we administer. The Office of Energy does that. And what criteria they set, I'm not familiar with. I think it may be between utilities and people who qualify for the credit. I don't believe, but would not swear, that it is taxpayer to taxpayer. I'm not sure that that is the case. One I am more a little familiar with is the farm worker housing credit, which can be transferred now due to legislation in the last few sessions, and that the primary reason for allowing that was because nonprofit entities are often involved in building this housing, and because they have no liability, they can't use the credit, so they're able to transfer it to a bank, for example, or another financial institution and leverage the loan on the property.
Right.
To my knowledge, those are the two that are transferable or sellable, and we are not involved with the farm worker housing credit. I believe the Office of Housing and Community Services may have that one.
Yeah.
So we do not have currently any program where we certify that a credit is eligible for sale or transfer. This is something that would be new, and again, we're, as the bill is written, we don't have the expertise to do that, Mr. Chair.
Deborah, I appreciate that, and I think I understand exactly where the bill comes from relative to the fact that maybe in other states the Department of Revenue and Taxation would be the place where all of the brokerage house for those tax credits are clearing. So where this appears to be something that the Department of Revenue is not presently adept at doing, and I don't, it would have a rather significant fiscal at that particular point if we were to try and have you folks start administering those. Maybe I could have you work with Paul Phillips and see what kind of language could be even adopted into the bill. And Paul, we may not be able to develop the fiscal on it this time. We might be able to get a bill that passes muster so far as what it is he's attempting to do. So would you take that on?
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Okay. Chair. Thank you.
Further questions of Department of Revenue? Deborah. Thank you very much, Deborah. With that, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on 3233, and we're going to open a public hearing on 2368, House Bill 2368.
Chairman Butler, with House Bill 2368, this is very similar to the House Bill 3232, but the differences are there's an increase in the maximum annual cap on the R&D credit to $1 million, but that is incurring beginning tax year 2006. So you already had testimony that in House Bill 3232 there was no revenue impact in this current biennium, but this bill would have a revenue impact in this biennium given the implementation date of tax year 2006 for that $1 million cap. And also they're increasing the number of years carry forward to the for the credit to 20 years versus 5 years that it is under current law. Also, it's increasing the maximum annual cap on the R&D to $2 million beginning in tax year 2008. So basically, it's going up $1 million more than House Bill 3232 was. So the revenue loss is larger. You can see as you go out, it begins with just roughly a little less than $1 million in 2006-07 for this biennium. And then in 2007-08, it's roughly $1.3 million. And then when you start moving up to that $2 million cap, then you've got a loss of $3.5 million in 2008-09 and 2009-10. And then it's growing because of the change in that cap as far or change in the carry forward provisions to 20 years, so that provision is causing additional increases in the revenue impact. And then basically as before, going up to the $1 million threshold, roughly I'm assuming between 6 and 12 corporations will be claiming that maximum credit, and then going between the $1 million and $2 million, roughly 4 to 5 corporations will be allowed to have that additional increase in the tax credit. And one other point that I know we just discussed, and so everyone's clear that, you know, as far as that unused tax credit that's out there of the $20 million in 2002, in that year alone, there were 85 corporations that did not have a reduction in their tax credit. So just realize it's not just there's a couple corporations that have a large portion of that unused tax liability that's out there, but there are a lot of corporations also that have unused tax credit. So that's why you're also seeing, these kind of proposals to go forward from 5 years to 20 years, because quite a few corporations, 85 in just 1 year, had unused tax credits.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And my notes show that we've had a hearing on this once previously on March 10th.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Joe, welcome. Joe Schweinhart from Association of Oregon Industries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Schweinhart, Associated Oregon Industries, who represent over 22,000 members, including 300-plus manufacturers, and I'm not going to name all those for you today, so we'll let that one go. Having once testified, there's a few things I wanted to touch base on for this bill. You've already had it described to you. One, R&D is an important aspect of Oregon manufacturing. According to our members, it's one of the top credits used tax credits used for their companies, and we want to take an opportunity here today to say we want to look at this thing beyond today and look into it to the future. If R&D is important to this state, we know R&D is important to R&D industries and to manufacturing, that rather than look to what we can do today, let's look to the future. We know manufacturing R&D companies and industry is facing stiff competition from other states as well as globally. And we think it's time to start looking ahead so we can build on what we can do. Now, for every dollar spent in manufacturing, is about $6 generated elsewhere in the economy. So this would be a very important bill to help generate, because we do hire people with this money, and we do generate jobs, and it will help build and strengthen our manufacturing over time. The only other thing I'd have to say would be that when you look at this 20-year tax credit moving forward, 20-year forward credit, that may take care of some of your concerns about using this buying and selling of credits. I think that'll allow business cycles to be taken into consideration. It'll allow businesses to plan and grow over that period of time and use their credits as they need to. And we think it's a good idea. We think it's a good bill. It's ready to move. And we think it's also looking to the future and not looking just beyond, just over our nose. So we'd like to see it move. And I'd like to just close with the idea that as I look, I can count votes on a committee, and in terms of support of the bill here we have today, I'd like you to know that I'm a big Beaver fan. Thank you very much.
Question of Mr. Swinehart.
Yes, for now.
Thank you, Joe. And we do have your testimony from the last meeting on this bill, as well as that of Representative Wisnant, whose bill this was brought forward at. Thank you very kindly. Further discussion relative to House Bill 2368 this time? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2368. Anything more for the good of the order? Colleagues, today we were scheduled to go until 4 o'clock. Look what happens when you start right after lunch and everybody is really woof. So I do appreciate the good work that you're doing, and I recognize that you, a number of you are assisting us on subcommittee issues that are very important. I look forward to continue to work with you on these and other important related issues as we continue to go forward. With that, we will meet at 1 o'clock tomorrow. There is no meeting on Friday, and we will be back on Monday and Tuesday. We're scheduled from 1 to 4. We're going, and I think we're scheduled also on Wednesday from 1 to 4. We're going to try and, as was directed by the speaker today, lengthen our stride and quicken our pace as much as we possibly can and see if we can't get more bills heard. So with that, again, colleagues, I do appreciate sincerely the work that you're doing, and we will close House Revenue.